Hi, this is Tony Vaughn from WBLS, Back in the Day.
Hi, this is DJ Christel.
Hi, this is DJ Cole.
Hello, this is Ed Ramsey with Poji Music.
And you're listening to For the Love of House.
For the Love of House.
For the Love of House.
For the Love of House podcast with DJ Mark Henderson. Big up, Mark. Thank you so much, man. I appreciate you, baby.
Hey, Househeads, welcome to this episode of For the Love of House podcast. This is the place where we explore, illuminate, and celebrate this thing we call house. I have some exciting news for you. I'm going to be in residence at the House of BAV at 359 Main Street in East Orange, New Jersey. We're calling it the FTLOH Sessions, in which I'll be mixing music that has been made by guests that have appeared on the podcast. I'm really looking forward to that. On today's show, we have a very special guest. I always say that, and they're all special. But this guest is really a legend. I'm talking about one of the forefathers of the Deep House movement. I'm talking about Reggie Burrell of the production team Burrell Brothers. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with Reggie Burrell. Music.
For the Love of House, we'll be right back after a word from our sponsor, Shemaine Tony Soul. Peace.
Hi, I'm Cortez.
And I'm Bridget.
Welcome to House of BAV.
House of BAV is the home of Born Again Vintage. It also houses other local creatives, artisans, and designers from the community. We sell one-of-a-kind, handmade, and original items. But House of BAV is more than a boutique. It's an experience. So come check us out at 359 Main Street in East Orange.
You can also reach us online at the website www.houseofbav.com. Thank you.
Urban element, deep element. Urban.
Every Monday night, let the Housing Project take you on a musical journey. Four soulful brothers from the Jersey Shore, serving the best in house music. Check out the Urban Deep Element show Monday at 8 p.m. only on Global House Movement Mixcloud.com.
Urban element, deep. Element.
Urban. Deep. Element.
Urban.
Ace Beat Music. The legacy continues.
Ace Mungin, the architect of the New Jersey house sound, is still going strong. Check out the latest soulful releases from Ace Beat Music at acebeatmusic.com.
And if you're looking for apparel, Ace Beat Music has you covered. UrbanBeatGear.com is where you'll find a great collection of vintage house t-shirts, hoodies, and more that show off your individual belief, intelligence, power, and excellence.
Ace Beat Music. They are house and so much more.
Hey, Househeads, we have another very special guest here on For the Love of House podcast. Today I'm talking to Reggie Burrell, one half of the production team, the Burrell Brothers.
Burrell, I like how you put the blood in front of it.
They are...
But we usually say V Burrell.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
No, I'm just playing. No, actually, it really is just Burrell Brothers, but you know.
Okay. Hey, that's cool. Let's get it right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it is what it is, and you know, people put their own spin. You know, I think we've been around long enough to where kind of people have embraced what we do, and it's great that people just kind of, it may be Ronald they're talking about and have no idea that I had anything to do with stuff. It may be me, it may be one of our records, and it's just Burrell Brothers, with all Burrell Brothers, Burrell. You know, it was just Burrell at one point. I don't know. I'll take it.
All right. So, Reggie, tell me, where does your musical journey begin, in fact?
It's my musical journey was sort of one of those put yourself in position to be lucky stories that really never happens. Since birth, if you let my mother tell it, we've always been drawn to music. Some babies are drawn to water, some babies are drawn to snow, some are sun babies. We were music
wow,
kids.
I love that.
Yeah, so that was just our thing. Whether I knew it or not, that was my thing, was music.
So a lot of music in the house? You heard a lot of music?
No, just my mother and father were just eclectic, and they just loved music, and I think they loved it even more because we loved it. So, I mean, you know, again, if you have kids and any parents out there, as long as it's positive, you tend to reinforce or support what your kids gravitate towards, you know? So that's why great athletes and great mathematicians and things, because, you know, a parent will spot what makes a kid kind of innately and happy. And that was the thing that made us just happy, music. We'd ask for the radio. She'd play it until we fell asleep. First thing in the morning, the radio was on. So she supported it. No real musicians or anybody playing instruments or nothing, but you know, music is ingrained into the culture. And, you know, I grew up in the 60s, so all the soul and all of that and leftover from 50s doo-wop era was just in the house. You know, we didn't have many vices in our house, but music was one. Comedy was the other, you know, a lot of Richard Pryor and all of that. So I was a quintessential 70s baby. Everything in the 70s was just life. And soul music and all that was just part of being alive, especially in New York and everything. So it could have been especially everywhere, but I grew up in New York. My mother and father loved music. They loved dancing. They loved the house parties, all of that. So it was just all music all day.
Now, did you play any instruments growing up?
I did. I started out playing around with them, but I think my me and my brother had a little healthy competition that, like, if I made a beat on the wall, his beat on the table was going to be better than my beat. And then after a while, it became, well, you do that and I do this. And then it started sounding like an arrangement. And again, didn't know it at the time, but we were actually like making arrangements with pots and pans.
Oh, wow. So you were practicing your future already.
That's right. Didn't even know it. We were just, that was just something, was just fun to us. You know, more so than riding a bike or dribbling a basketball or anything. I mean, that was fun, but we couldn't wait to get home to do this. Mm. We whip out the sticks and pots and glasses and the thing is, my mother and father didn't stop us most of the time. What are you doing? You know, put that. I mean, even my own kids, I'd be like, can y'all stop? But they never stopped us, which was sort of encouraging on the low, mm-hmm. right? They didn't say, get out the pots and pans and bang,
mm-hmm.
Like Joe Jackson or something. Like, we're going to practice right now, you know, kind of deal. They just supported us. I wouldn't say encourage or discourage, but just supported.
Now, did you guys form a band at one time?
Let it be told, my first band is still the band I'm in, Burrell. So my brother, you know, we'd always make up little songs and have jam sessions and things like that. So I was kind of in a band. I was born with my bandmate, right, my twin brother. But growing up, we may have, you know, played around. You know, I think every kid in the 80s and 70s had a little doo-wop friend on the corner and everything. So we were accustomed to being around people who loved music. Maybe not as much, maybe not as dedicated, but, you know, it's like trying to find a rapper these days. I mean, or a DJ. I mean, they're around. Everybody's either a rapper or a DJ. So it's not hard to find someone that you share the passion with. But our first official band was going into high school. We were about 12 turning 13, or maybe 13 turning 14. And the guys in the band were all seniors. And I think maybe one of them was like out of high school. So we were hanging around 17, 18 year olds. And we were like 12, 13 year olds. And that was our first official band called Inner Spirit.
And what instrument did you play? Or were you guys singing?
We played all the instruments, but I guess if you're asking like kind of primary, what we gravitated towards is, I gravitated towards the percussion. I had congas. I still have the conga my father bought me to play in that band, right? Because I didn't have percussion. They had percussion, but I didn't have my own. So instead of like playing two congas, I wanted to play three. So he bought me the third, and I still have that one in my living room. My children play with that one. So I was mainly percussion or whatever the song needed. Like if we needed cowbells, we needed that. We kind of all split up the duties. It was the band went through a couple of iterations of 12 people, 13 people, 5 people, 7 people, girl in it, not a girl in it, background, you know, just because we needed to be versatile because of the songs. We were a cover band, but we played Rolling Stones, we played Cameo, we did Rapper's Delight, we did everything that was just we considered hot. We didn't just say, okay, we're a disco band or something, but if it was a Jimmy Spicer record, and then we'd do Fire and Desire by Rick James. So if we needed a girl, we would pick up a girl in a band and play with that woman and try to do a lot of Atlantic Star and Midnight Star. You know, they all had girls in the band. So the girl would get a workout. Like, we're doing songs with girls in it. That'll be so you're in the band. And then, you know, she may fade away, or the horn player might go to college or something. So the core always stuck together to like the end, to when we graduated high school, because me and my brother was the last of the Mohicans. So everybody else had jobs and they went to the military and all that. So we kind of were back to ground zero at the end of high school. It was just me and my brother.
You know what? That's what a coincidence. Because when I was in high school, I had a little funk band and I played percussion. And we used to cover Bootsy and Parliament and all that stuff. So. Hey, yeah. I understand.
So you guys are really, really good.
Hey.
If you're going to go after Bernie Worrell.
Hey, you I didn't say we covered it good. I said we covered it.
Okay. You did the best rendition that you could, right?
So what was your...
This make a lot of noise.
What was your first exposure to dance music or house music, and why do you think it grabbed you so?
Well, I'm going to give you the most shallow answer in the world, right? Nothing deep here. I liked it for several reasons, but they're really shallow reasons. One is because girls like to dance to it. That's really the main reason, because it was like disco and girls and people like dancing to it. And I like looking at girls dancing.
There you go.
I liked it because it was new, right? And if you were going to make it, you really couldn't be judged. There were no rules. There was no way that everybody in the crowd would know so much about it that they could judge you and tell you shouldn't be doing that. Right now, everybody knows everything about it all, right? It's been around long enough. Like rap music, it's around. Like if you listen to older rap music, you just appreciate it because it was something your mother and father didn't want you to listen to, right? So you just listen to them. You get older, you want content, lyric, and then you know what's good and what's not and what sounds like a hit and what doesn't. So you become more sophisticated in your taste. When it first started out, as long as you had that kick, you could basically do anything.
Mm.
And I loved it for that, because it was like, I guess, what a jazz artist would consider freedom.
Right.
There were no rules. There were absolutely no rules. So you, as an artist, you couldn't go wrong as long as you had a four on a floor.
Yeah, as long as you you move the body, move the dance floor.
Yeah, it didn't have to have the open hi-hat like it does now, or the one hand. It's rules and things now, right? There's enough out there where we have a subconscious kind of comparison, and what's too slow, what's too fast. You know, it's too many, too much of vocals, you know what I mean? Like we have a mental metric of what house music is. But the reason why I liked it was just that simple. The girls liked it and there were no rules. So I couldn't be wrong.
Nice, nice. What were some of the early experiences in terms of going out to venues? What were some of the venues you guys used to go to?
Believe it or not, because again, it was so new, it really didn't have in where I grew up, weren't any venues. We did what we always did, is someone would rent a firehouse or it would be someone's home, or it would be a civic center or something. And in my case, I used to teach Kung Fu at Livingston College, which is part of Rutgers University. Mm-hmm. And the DJ there was a sort of like an underling of Timmy Register. He was a WBLS kind of mobile DJ. His name was Berlin Freeland.
What was his name?
And he also, Vernon Freeland, and they called by V Free, and he was from Newark. So he would come to, I know I visited him. He opened up a record shop later, and it was in Newark or thereabouts. It could have been Irvington or one of those, but I believe he was from Newark, coming down to New Brunswick, Jersey, to go to I think it was Livingston campus he was on. He went every Thursday. They had what they call pub, and it was basically one of the cafeterias turned into a dance hall, and he would play what he would, you know, sort of his best rendition of what a Timmy Regisford and Merlin Bob and Tony Humphries and John John's last name,
John Robinson.
There you go, John Robinson. Forgive me, rest in peace, sir. He was a great guy. Camacho and you know, all of them were just, I wouldn't say starting out, but they weren't 30 years in the game. They, you know, coming back, you know, they knew what they were doing, but I didn't know what they were doing, right? So when they played certain records, that seemed like a club to me, because that's what we called club music back then. And I mean, just to show you my ignorance, is that when I first heard the term house music, I thought it was because you made it at your house.
Oh, it could be. It could be.
Well, you know, we now know it's for the warehouse in Chicago, but when they said house music, oh yeah, I make it at my house. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I was talking with DJ Randall Smooth, who's from Chicago. Mm-hmm. We were talking about how, you know, when there was that backlash against disco, and the record companies kind of stopped playing disco, and then the DJs started to experiment with producing because they needed something to play, you know.
Mm-hmm. I'm aware of sort of like the stories from the DJs and the people that were there. You know, I'm in it, so I didn't back up from it to smell the roses. I'm right in the garden, right? So I didn't know all of this was kind of growing around. I just knew that from many years of playing, you know, and playing around with music and playing, I had a voice, I had a creativity that I could make music out of anything, anywhere, and still do. That's why I think some people regard me and my brother as being prolific. It's because I practiced being prolific. You know, we can make music out of anything. I wouldn't consider myself an expert on any one instrument, but if you give me 10 minutes with it, I'll come up with something that we can use. The saxophone or bass or guitar, I mean, am I a bassist? No. Do I play? I play at it. I play around with it until I get something I like, and then we put it down and we make something out of it, right? So something out of nothing is what creativity is. It's in spite of itself, right? So I didn't really have no measuring stick. I didn't say I want to be like this person or this. I was influenced, or maybe even inspired is a better word, by everything. It just wasn't music. It could be a phrase someone said, or the way they walked down the hallway could have had a shuffle that I thought was like, wow, okay, I heard a beat or rhythm there that I'm gonna, you know, do my best to replicate or somehow put into a rhythm, because that's what I'm made out of. I hear rhythm and melody in everything. So, you know, to answer your question, it really wasn't too hard to understand that this is something on the rise, you know. And again, I'm old enough to know what hip hop, where it came from. I was born and raised in Queens, New York. So I remember seeing hip-hop before it was like an art. It was just noise again, right? So I saw this coming because I was the seeds of hip-hop. So
in terms of working with your brother, what is the division of labor? Do you specialize in beats and he does sequencing, or is it just, does it just flow back and forth between you?
We end up, well, number one, we rarely work together. That's, I think more people are starting to realize that. If you read our records, you rarely see our names like together, especially with the body of work. Okay. It'll be like, or Ronald, so we do work together, and that's basically how we work together, is that I'll come up with some stuff and I shoot it to him, and he basically A&Rs me. And he might go, give me the bass line, and he'll do something to it and send it back. And I mean, he won't get credit like, oh, bass line by Ronald, or, you know, just I'm his biggest fan,
and he's mine.
Fantastic.
And we just happen to want the best for whatever. I don't have to, you don't have to give me credit for anything. I just love to see him be the best he can be. So if I can help, I help. And if he helps me, I mean, he's the first person to hear everything I do. Mm-hmm. And if it's something that we want to do together, like we've done an ABT project, we did the Burrell record. And even if you look at our first album, the song is either written by me or him. It's really not, there may be one or two that we wrote together. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, we come together at the end. It's like being on a basketball team. I mean, you got Kobe on your team. You still got on a Laker jersey. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You're a Laker. You win when he wins. You're on a team. Mm-hmm. So I say Burrell because it doesn't matter who does it. To me, it doesn't matter.
What was your first record? What was your first dance record?
I think our first dance records never came out because we were practicing, you know, we were just making music. So the first dance records were just, you know, guys playing around mm-hmm. with it. And they were records. I think they could have been good enough, but I mean, the quality was maybe a little too crappy. We really didn't know what we were doing. So it wasn't on purpose, you know, with a purpose, like we're going to put this out. I mean, it was nothing like that. So the first records are on cassette tapes in a bag in storage somewhere.
Wow.
But the first time we made a concerted like effort to make records was actually the demos, which ended up being, you know, 90% of the Burrell record, the first one on Virgin Records.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I want to talk about that for a minute. So you guys had been working and you got signed to the UK label Virgin Records, their dance yep. division.
Yep.
Tell me how that came to be and how was it working for the label?
Let me see how the best way to start this. This was one of my friends was going to the record store. And in the record store I guess the guy who headed up the record store, he was also the merchandiser, if you will. And every Thursday, let's say one day a week, a lady would call and ask how certain records were doing. Right. I think she was, you know, analytics somewhere for some distributor. Right. So when my friend walked through the door, he had one of the boom boxes, of course, back then. And he was playing something. And as the merchandiser was like, he heard it on the phone. Hold on one second. Yeah. He was on the phone and he heard something that he didn't recognize. And it was his or her job to be able to recognize everything. So she heard it and was like, "What is that?" And he couldn't exactly tell her. So he yelled out to my buddy, what record is that?" And he told him, "Well, it's not really a record. It's my friend's." And, so she said, "Well, can I have their number so I can, you know, basically ask what record that is?" Mm-hmm. And she called and we spoke and not really knowing what it was all really about, because I don't think he knew either, that she asked if she can come visit us. So I gave her directions out to my house, and her boyfriend, a fiance at the time, was Frank Mendez. And they came out to the house and I played her a couple things. I think they stayed for about a half an hour. And in that half an hour, I might have played her 30 tracks. And she was like, okay, damn, you do it, right? So when they were leaving, they had asked me, "Well, can you come to New York and maybe work in one of the studios and bump this stuff up and maybe, you know, I think we know some people." I'm right in there. "We know some people that might be able to help." And I was like, "Yeah." So they really were downplaying it.
Mm-hmm.
So we did, you know, but the funny story is when they came out, they didn't know I had a twin brother. So they were just about to jump into the car and go back to New York. And I said, "Well, can I bring my brother?" And they was like, "What does he do?" And I said, "Well, he does music like me." And they said, "Well, what does he look like?" I said, "He's my twin brother." And she's like, "Wait, you got a twin, like exactly, he looks exactly like me and does exactly what I do." And it was like, I could see it in their face go, "Holy shit." So she said, "Yeah, bring him." So I called Ronald. I guess he was over his girlfriend's house at the time, whatever. And I said, yeah, let's come out to the studio. You know, they want us to make some tracks or something. So we went out there. And basically, on our way home, we heard Timmy Rutherford playing what we did in the studio maybe a half an hour ago on the radio. Right. And when he played it on the radio, he said, and my manager, at the time they weren't my managers, but let's just call them managers, they call, you know, at home, the message was the phones lit up like crazy. Like they were, and what I did, I think I did also, I did a cover of Twist and Shout by, you know, the Beatles or, you know, and it was just crazy. It was just the Wild Wild West, and he had a lot of our stuff. We did like four or five songs that were new, only he had. He premiered them, you know, New York radio at the time was Timmy Rutherford and Merlin Bob and all them. So it just went crazy. And what happened is I don't know, it could have been a couple of weeks later, he says that he could get us signed to Virgin Records. He was then the VP at Motown, or at least being moved to Motown. And he introduced us to the Virgin crew, and Virgin, you know, being overseas and really on top of sort of the music scene, they jumped at it, and they signed us over there, and then it became a Virgin America deal, and that's the Virgin story. So it was just basically a guy playing my records out loud, somebody knowing somebody who knew Timmy put it on a record, and that's it. I really had nothing to do with it.
Wow, that's a universe at work. But it must have been thrilling, right, when you heard, like, how did you feel when you first heard your stuff?
Yeah, I did. It was, you know what? It was both. It was both awesome. And then I was like, it sounds like I'm playing it on a cassette. Like, it wasn't just boom. But I tell you what was. When we finished the album, we came back from London from the photo shoot, and I went into a store, I think, to grab something to eat, and I was by myself. I jumped back in my car. I turned on the, because I was playing my album on the cassette. But if you remember, when you jump out your car, sometimes your car will eject your cassette. So when I jumped back in the car, my song was on the radio, and I thought I was playing the cassette. Until I saw the cassette was ejected, and then I heard the deal. I was like, oh, my song was just on radio, like daytime. I thought it was where I left it off in the thing. So that was a surprise. That made me laugh.
Wow.
That made me laugh. Yeah.
And, you know, they seem to have a greater respect for the music over in Europe. You'll hear it during the day instead of like in the middle of the night, but that's.
Yeah, I think it's. I don't. I wouldn't say like greater. I know what people say when they say that. I say it's just different. It's a different respect for it. I think. I mean, because if you can make it here, you know, it's just different. You know, because again, I've had a career here with some of the superstars of the day, and I see how they make it. And it's pretty fantastic when they do it. I think they're more eclectic about it. I think they maybe appreciate a lot of different styles, but I mean, making it here is just a little different. You know, you gotta adhere to the rules. And if you adhere to, because right now, I mean, a lot of European or, you know, overseas acts are making it big. The K-pop thing, Adele and Ed Sheeran and all of them, I mean, they're not from here. So can you say it's better over here? I mean, they came over here. They're here. Why are they here? Because I think it's just different. I think underground and eclectic works better over there, and I think mainstream and pop works better over here.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it. That's an interesting observation. Hey.
Yep. Well, it's because I do that. I do all of that. So I kind of see the difference, you know, as an experience. Not as I don't have to read about it. I can see it in my royalty checks. Things work over there a little different than they work over here.
Right. Hey, Reggie, tell me about the track Reaching. Is there a backstory? Can you tell me how that came together?
I don't even really remember how that came together, but I think I was in D&D Studios, and my managers hooked that up because they knew Abby from Move It. And Abby dug what we were doing, and she asked for a remix, and they brought it into the studio when I was working on some stuff, and I was like, yeah, I can do that. So they, you know, we had the tapes, they were there, and I just did what I do, you know? Yeah, that's, again, really wasn't any kind of earthquake and the, you know, fantastic story, but I did make a lifelong friend that I still work with, which is Vincent Herbert.
Yeah.
Who sang lead on that. Yep.
Yeah, great track, though. You know, really, really a great track.
Yeah, it is.
Yep. Shout out to Abigail Adams. She was on the show, on my show the first season. Shout out to Abigail and Moving Records. So I want to get into, it's interesting, your catalog is, well, you said prolific, it spans so many different genres. What do you attribute your versatility to?
My parents. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'd have like OJ albums sitting next to Conway Twitty. And we'd listen to it all.
Yeah.
So it's them. They didn't. I didn't have to break down any walls because there weren't any.
Wow. Yeah. Well said. Did who were some of the people that influenced you? Were there any producers in particular that you kind of liked? I know you guys were doing your own stuff, but mm-hmm. were there any particular producers that you kind of like caught your ear as you were starting to do this type of music?
Yeah, there are several for several different reasons. Like, I like bands, so I guess the band members were Slave, Cameo, Leon Silvers did a lot of stuff with the Whispers and all that stuff. I like Kashif.
Oh yeah, Kashif.
Yeah, the Carpenters. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, you know, all the soft rock stuff. Love all that. Absolutely all that stuff.
Now, you worked with Todd Terry at one point. Is that correct?
Oh yeah, yeah, that's my dude. Yeah, we still work with him. Mm-hmm.
Great.
Yeah, we've done stuff that we never really got credit for, because again, it's not, sometimes it's not just about that. I mean, Todd is one of my boys. When I said I get along with a couple people, he would be one of them. We check in with each other every week or so just to say what's up. And I mean, he's one of the guys that can go over to my mother's house and have dinner with her, and I'm like, what are you doing? Oh, I'm eating with your mom. That's cool. Tell her I said hi. Call us on.
Yeah.
So yeah. Yeah, one of just yeah no, he's one of my dudes. Absolutely.
Yeah, I love his sound. Yeah, the original master at work, right? Yeah.
Well, yeah. I would say that, you know, from the Jungle Brothers on up to, you know, everything he's done with Kenny and Louie and all the rest of them. Yeah. Yeah. And he's going strong. He's got Freeze Records back up and running and everything.
Now, I was doing some research and I came across an article. It was basically, they're kind of saying that the Burrells are sort of unsung, or maybe mm-hmm. didn't get the credit that they deserve. Do you guys feel like that or no?
It depends on who I'm talking to. I mean, and that's just the I don't think we was kind of doing it for that. But if I was to kind of look at it from like outer space or something, I'd be like, yeah, I mean, I think we could be a little more celebrated, but from the fact that we do a couple different genres, you know, not many producers can say they've had hits in four different genres. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I helped to invent house music at a certain level. And I also have, you know, work with like the Whitney Houstons and Tony Braxtons too mm-hmm. on my original stuff. So we did R&B, pop, hip hop, and house music, and had, you know, verifiable hits in all of those. I think it's a pretty cool thing to say. So do I need a, you know, gold medal for it? You know, not really, but I wouldn't say unsung, because the people that know what we do, I think they appreciate it, which is who I'm doing it for. It's my first, myself, and then, you know, you know, I don't even want to call them fans, just people who like my records. I'm going to try to do this a little different. I'm actually in a studio session while we do this, so you might hear something that sounds like I'm talking to myself. I want to transport these always. But yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. Like, those who know, you know. Yeah.
And that's fine with me. Now, do I wish more people knew? Yeah. So yeah, in a kind of way, yeah, that's what I'm saying. So if you know, you know, and I appreciate everybody who know, but could more people know? Mm-hmm.
And even if, you know, aside from the R&B and the hip hop, even within house, you know, some of your stuff is, you know, very housey, gospely. I've heard stuff that's very minimalist. It's a little bit of everything.
It is a little bit of everything. You're right. I mean, I really didn't realize that until we did the deal with Defected, and I had to listen to it all. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wait a minute. This is... Yeah, I never really appreciated our catalog until I listened to it all on a bypass. Mm-hmm.
I was thinking of some of... I was reminded a little bit of Joey Beltran.
Joey. We actually cut some records in my basement. I was surprised he was there. I actually was a little fanned out a little bit when he was in my basement.
Oh, nice.
Because he did hot music and, you know, well, not Joey Beltran. I'm talking about pal Joey. But got Joey Beltran, my mistake. Yep, Joey's a good guy. He was up at the office all the time. We had some great conversations. And, yeah, I mean, great fan of his. He's a music guy.
He had that energy flash. That was a hot track.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
So, Reggie, where can people find you in terms of social media?
Not hard to find. You can put in Burrell Brothers and it'll pop up. But I think mostly if you used VBBEG, that's acronym for Burrell Brothers Entertainment Group.com, I just listed all of my records. I got about 90% of them right in your face. So you can basically find it. I'm doing that on purpose now. I guess it's a legacy move, but we're just making it easy for people to find us because we got people really looking for us now. I feel like a old jazz guy, you know, like when you start to really, really learn how to play an instrument, you want to know where it came from and all, you know, like the roots of it. I feel like people are starting to really want to know the history and figure out who helped build this Mount Rushmore. Mm-hmm. And I think me and my brother might be a part of that little landscape there.
Say that again. Can you say it one more time for the people? What was it? Your website?
Well, THE, as in the, BBEG, that's the acronym for Burrell Brothers Entertainment Group. So thebbeg.com.
Great. So what do you got coming on the horizon? Anything that we need to be looking out for?
You could check with Defected. A lot of stuff that we're doing is through Defected. I just did some things on Running Back Records. Shout out to them about a year ago. And that's still big. You know, I still get interviews and things and people asking about that project. But we're doing a lot through Defected right now. And revitalizing the New Groove moniker underneath their system.
Right. New Groove. That was the label that you created.
Yep. Well, yeah, we co-founded it. It was, you know, the funny story is again, when we jumped off of Virgin Records, we had a bunch of stuff, you know, just being prolific and recording and creating every day. We had a lot of stuff that just was never going to make it on Virgin because Virgin had their idea what they want to do. And we had our idea that just wasn't working out. Nothing nefarious, nothing crazy. It's just, you want us to kind of do this and we kind of really want to do this. And I think it's time to part ways type stuff. Mm-hmm. So we did. And what are we going to do now? So Frank and Karen, who became our managers, just threw it out there. Hey, you want to start a label? And I'm like, sure. So they came back like the next day and was like, we're thinking about calling it New Groove. And I said, well, spell it N-U Groove, because I was working on a band called New View and it was spelled N-U-V-U-E. And so they changed N-E-W to N-U, and that's how that came about. So co-founded is what I kind of like to say more than own, because I didn't own it. I didn't do the paperwork. We kind of paid for it, you know, the money that we were generating from Virgin and other things that we're doing, shows and stuff, kind of paid for it. But for the most part, I didn't own it. So that's New Groove, and it's still, you know, underneath Simon Dunmore and him over there at Defected, and he's doing a great job revitalizing our music and putting it out to new audiences and people looking for it. It's very easy to find on Defected record label.
Okay.
House music.
Hey, Reggie, it's really been a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Okay, my pleasure, man. You know, reach out, and you know, we always got things cooking. I got way more to talk about, but you know, I'll let you go.
Hey, we can bring mm-hmm. you back, you know. Music.
Yeah, part two, right? Yeah, I'll bring Ronald.
Sure. No. I would love that if we could.
Mm-hmm. The world according to Ronald Burrell, yeah. Right? This is Reggie. Okay, well, I mean, if I could, I'd like to thank everybody for the many years of support. And, you know, the Burrell Brothers aren't going anywhere. We got a lot of stuff out there. Please don't be afraid to patronize us. We appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Reggie. I'll talk to you.
All right. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Sir. Yep.
Hey House says, be sure to check out the Burrell Brothers catalog. You can find them on TrackSource and Beatport and everywhere else that you can get your digital music. I'd like to thank my guest, Reggie Burrell, once again, and we look forward to maybe having both brothers on, Ronnie and Reggie, sometime in the near future. This has been DJ Mark Henderson, a.k.a. The Master Killer, a.k.a. Gary Seven. Thank you for supporting the podcast and tuning in. And keep a lookout for the FTLOH sessions at House of BAV. All right. See you next time. For the love of house.